This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.
Hello and welcome to Inside Commodity Futures. My name's Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take, and joined with me today, as always, is John Payne of This Week in Grain. How's it going, John?
Fantastic, fantastic. Another week by the books here. We've got another USDA report and then a whole lot of weather watching after that. So trying to get everybody prepared for what the next couple of weeks can bring.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the next thing on the docket here is the June 30th USDA report for the acreage, and we'll also have the June 1st quarterly stocks.
Yes.
Just to do a quick recap, the trade is looking for about 92.9 million acres in corn, which is just, in March we were at 93.6, so that's down about 700,000 acres. For soybeans, they're looking to go to 83.8. We were at 82.2 in March, so a change of maybe adding a million point six acres. So I guess they're looking for 1.6 million acre add in soybeans, and they're looking for 700,000 acres coming down in corn. The other stuff, the wheat, the wheat acres were negligible. You know, maybe add a couple here and there, but a couple hundred thousand here and there, but nothing to really make waves, I would say. So I don't know. I think it's the ranges of the analysts, for corn have been, as low as 92 million and as high as 94 million, and for beans as low as 82 million, as high as 85 million. I don't know. I think what the market's really just going to be looking for is a little bit less corn acres and then about 1.5 million beans. You thinking the same?
Yeah, I think we'll see the corn come in somewhere in the 93 range. You could see it jump a little bit just because the early planting went so well, but I think it'll be negligible. On the bean side, though, really this is the lever I think they can pull. The USDA can kind of adjust things the quickest. So if they come up with a number that's 84 million, you trend yield that from, what did you say it was, 81 and 81.5 was where we were?
We were in March, we were at 82.2.
Okay,
and the average guess is going to be 83.8.
So yeah, I don't see it getting over 84.2. I think to see 2 million more will be a shock to the market. But if they do, that's 100 million in carryout. So that's
right.
the first way I would look at it. But, just the way the early planting went in, a couple of farmers I work with did swap. They swapped from cotton, not from corn. And it doesn't feel to me like it's going to be one of those markets that's going to show an 85 number. If it does, I would be so quick to say curtains for the market, but I think it would show a pretty quick sell-off there over the next few days.
Yeah, from some of the guys I talked to, they had a few conversations with farmers in Ohio, and some of them, where it was kind of wet, and they weren't able to get all their corn in on time, and they got soybeans instead. But those stories are very anecdotal. It just seems like it's not like a widespread trend out there. So, I think corn will lose a little bit, soybeans come up. There's always the wild card of prevent plant. Do we see more acres come out of prevent plant than previously? Because we do have a pretty high prevent plant number. If the USDA was going to surprise, it'd be from that. I don't know. I mean, price. It does take some planning and capital to really ramp up acres. And, the prices have only come up this much, over the course of 2 months. So, 3 months ago, we were – no one was really looking to add acres. I don't know. We'll see how much they're able to do. And then we've got the other half of the equation is the June stocks report.
Yes.
So they're looking for an average. They're thinking about 4.5 billion on the corn. You know, the range has been about 4.4 to 4.65. Soybeans, they're looking for about 829 million. The range has been from 775 to 862. And the wheat's just bearish. They're looking for a quarterly stocks of 982. Now, what's interesting about that is, you know, the June stocks for wheat are pretty much the year-ending stocks.
Right.
So, you know, so some of the USDA in their last, I think, WASDE said June wheat stocks would be about 980. So the June 1 quarterly stocks number you would think would be about 980. Now, corn and beans are still have one more quarter left in them until the until their year-end stock. So, you know, if we use about, let's say, 2.5 million bushels every quarter in corn, you know, if we have 4.5, let's just say we have 4.5 billion at the end of Q3, the June 1 stocks, you would think then, you know, we'd have about around 2 billion or a little bit less when we get to the final end of the year. And the same with the soybeans. We use about, you know, they're probably projecting us to use about 600 to, you know, 550 to 600 in the last quarter. So if we come in at 829, yep, you know, we use about 550 or 600 million, you know, then the old crop ending stocks for soybeans would eventually be around like 250 to 300 million. So I don't know if that's – so the soy – so it's interesting. The June 1 stocks number, what I always find about interesting about that one is we're getting down. We're only one more quarter away until we get to the ending stocks of the year. So a surprise in June 1 can really make a big difference because it's a big impact on where then the estimates would be adjusting higher or lower for the ending stock number.
Right, and just if you're new to this, Craig and I are talking about the quarterly numbers. Now, every month we get a WASDE report, and that WASDE will talk about what Craig is essentially insinuating based off of what this quarterly stocks number will be. It's what we're going to have at the end of the year, September 1 or the end of September. This is kind of just a quarterly update, so we're going to get a total number of stocks on hand, and these are compiled by different people than who compile the WASDE, so there is some potential for a little bit of a diversion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, do you see any change? I was thinking maybe wheat we might see a little bit of an increase just as prices have fallen, maybe see consumption numbers jump a little bit. I'm not saying we're going to see some sort of change in the carryout that's going to make us look completely different, but maybe 50, 60, 100 million bushels get moved from corn into wheat consumption on the feed side, and maybe that thing, that could be kind of the surprise of the report. I'm struggling to find anything other than that, other than acreage that's really going to shock things.
Yeah.
You see anything different?
Yeah, so when I think about market surprises, there's a few factors in there. One, are too many people leaning one way. So like for the wheat market, there's a lot of shorts out there, right?
Right.
And
right.
Prices are pretty low to begin with. So on the wheat market, you know, usually you'd say, okay, could there be an upside surprise? If there was, you know, it would probably be because, you know, you are right, the prices of wheat are, you know, are pretty low. The United States wheat isn't, you know, I wouldn't say it's ultra competitive right now in the world market, but it's a lot better than it used to be. And also, you know, with the protein value, I wouldn't be surprised, and I hear this more and more each day, that some of the lower protein wheat out there is being used for, instead of corn for feed. So I wouldn't, if there was going to be a surprise on Thursday in that stocks report, I think it would be more wheat used than they were expecting. Again, if that would be where you'd see a surprise if there was going to be one.
Sure.
With corn, then, you wouldn't be using as much feed for corn, so you could see a little bit of a bearish surprise in corn. I wouldn't be shocked if that happened. And then with soybeans, if there was going to be any kind of surprise, I think it would be on the export side. Maybe the USDA is discounting the amount of demand from the export number.
Sure.
So if I were looking for surprises, I would say, you know, we could see a bearish surprise for corn, maybe a bullish surprise for beans and wheat. I think for, you know, the corn market, I think is pretty neutral, though there is a pretty big long, right, still in the corn for the funds.
Yes.
So a bearish surprise in corn could cause a big move. Like if the stocks are higher than they think, plus the acreage doesn't come down. Like what if the acreage stays the same?
Right.
You know, that could cause some problems in the corn market, you know, where you see everyone heading for the exits. I think with beans, even though everyone's so long, I, you know, You're right. You know, I think you're right, John. We have to see something like two million plus in the acres, and maybe you know, we are all wrong about the quarterly stocks, like they're 840 or 850 million. I mean, that would do some real damage, I think, to the soybean market in a hurry. And then for the wheat market, because the wheat market's so short. And I just want to reemphasize, when I look for surprises, I always like to see where the funds are first and what would make them cause to panic, right? So if they're long corn, they're long beans, they're short wheat, you know, the bullish surprise on the wheat market would be the feed number that we're using a lot more feed than we think. So those are the things I'd be wary of going in. And, you know, it's good for producers to understand that, you know, where prices go if there is a surprise, so they can get hedged or marketed accordingly beforehand. And from the speculator, you know, you got to be careful with those perspectives if you're too heavy on one side, or who knows, maybe you're taking a shot on a surprise with an option or something like that.
Yeah, that would be, I mean, we're 15-year lows in the Kansas City wheat contract made today. Really completely falling apart just in the last week. We're down about 20 cents, and you're getting into the point now where you're down 3-4% a day if you're moving 10 cents like we have been. I think that the major story should be corn, and I certainly understand that the bullish justification of yield. You know, we have to do the yield. I certainly understand the justification for higher exports, as Brazil seems to be kind of tapped out as far as their pipeline goes. But what I can't justify right now with getting long would be the fact that the spec position, Craig and I, we were both surprised when we saw this out the CFTC numbers on Friday, was that the break that brought us limit down a week ago today didn't see much liquidation on the spec position. And that was a little bit of an eye-opener to me, which basically told me that move was commercial and that the farmers are selling out. So now the farmers are starting to move bushels, the basis drops, and now the specs are going to lose a little bit of ground here if they don't get a bullish surprise out of this story, if we don't see the acreage drop, or like you mentioned, maybe exports come up a little bit and USDA brings those stocks numbers down to, say, 4.2. Then I think we could justify a rally, but I'm a little more nervous the fact that you know, the bullish story that had really been driving the markets, the South American story, wraps itself up right around the time that a lot of these folks with old crop corn in the bin need to sell. And then you have the kind of tired long that's out there, maybe you've bought on that break above $4, that all of a sudden now find themselves 20 cents underwater and they've got to dump. So I'm a little nervous about corn here. I think certainly you know, there's the story out there that could get it pushing back towards 420. I think it's got to be weather. I don't think it's going to be anything USDA driven. So that would be kind of my I guess if you're putting a foot in the water, I would be looking maybe more on the short side of corn, the long side of wheat. And I wouldn't touch soybeans. I think soybeans are a you know, they're a ball of razor blades right now that could cut you up one way or the other. And you look at the price action just from yesterday being down as the options expired on Friday, almost below $11 on the July, and then this morning we're at $11.60 just 2 days later. So it's a market right now that I would avoid if you're not either into spread trading or using options. I just think the flat price is too aggressive for me to be playing into a report like this.
You're absolutely right. The flat price is hard to deal with right now. It's, up 60 cents over 2 days, down 70 cents over a couple. And if you're going to look at spreads, I like the November, I like November, May as a tradable spread. I like Nov as a tradable spread. If you want to get cute with the old crop, new crop, you can always look at August, old crop versus November. Sure. But there's a lot out there to do that can kind of, one is a little bit of a margin break, but two can just kind of help you out sometimes during the crazy. You know, when it's just, you know, you're like, we just moved 30 cents in beans and there was no news. So, you know, which can happen. So sometimes that can be tough to take. So, yeah, for that, I do like the spreads too. I agree with you on corn versus wheat. I mean, wheat looks attractive as a value compared to corn here. It just seems that wheat, again, who knows, but wheat could have a few more bullish cards in the deck than corn does right now, or vice versa. Corn just could have a few more bearish cards in the deck than wheat would. So I'm going to definitely keep an eye on that. We have been talking about the VSR for a long time here on this podcast, and I write about it. And we did. We finished up that calculation. The VSR is gonna go into effect. So which means the storage that elevators can charge is going to expand by 3 cents per month, which doesn't mean the spreads have to widen out that much, but they can if they want to. Mm-hmm. And if there's a lot of wheat out there and there's poor demand and the elevators are filling up, you know, we're going to probably see the wheat spreads expand. That'll probably be bearish for the Chicago wheat. It'll probably be a little bit of a bullish kicker for the Kansas City versus Chicago wheat spread, I would think.
I'd like to see that.
Yeah.
It's been a tough quarter for the folks who have been wanting to buy that spread, man. We've been down. I think you go back to a chart and look at March 1, we were basically down almost every day.
Yeah.
Maybe a green bar here or there, but boy, the KC story is pretty baked in. I have a hard time finding myself wanting to encourage guys to sell it out of the field just because it's so low, and I think that there could be a problem down the road. But right now, literally, there's nothing in the wheat world that would inspire any sort of demand rationing.
Well,
and there's a lot around here, so if you need it, I'm sure those guys would sell it to you.
I would say this about the Kansas City wheat versus corn spread. You know, if we are going to see an uptick in wheat in feed wheat, I think it's going to be from the Kansas City wheat contract. You know, basically when they harvest the wheat, you know, different wheat is going to have different protein levels. They're not all the same. And I just think some of the lower protein Kansas City wheat crop is going to be, is going to get discounted compared to where
right.
Kansas City wheat is now. And so it means it's going to be even more of a deal against corn. And even the lower protein wheat is going to have more protein than that corn. So, especially for the Kansas City wheat. So if we do see a surprise, I think it's through the Kansas City wheat, and that also would bode well for Kansas City versus Chicago. Kansas City wheat versus Chicago wheat, and also corn.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I think that the livestock numbers that have come out the last couple of weeks have shown that there's ample supply, more coming down the pipeline, especially in the hog markets. They're looking to expand margins, and they're holding back breeding hogs for more production down the road. So yeah, that's the argument. I certainly think weather could trump it all.
If we get
a hot, dry spell in the next month, the corn can rally. But I think you're going to have a hard time making the case that corn goes to $5 and KC wheat stays right here, because you're going to look at that demand rationing coming from the feed markets, and not to mention other places that are going to keep that stocks level somewhat down. But I will say, exports can trump all this as well. And we're seeing, South American numbers in random places pointing out that their stocks to use could be below 10%, as low as 5% in some areas. So I think it's justified to have prices at these levels right now for corn, but I think they're waiting on the U.S. crop. And if the U.S. is going to do a 170-171 yield, I would be moving it sooner rather than later, maybe looking to rebuy it on the harvest rather than selling it on the harvest, just because I think it's a market like wheat. Once you're going to see the corn break, people sell it, and then we tend to see a little bit of a rally into the end of the year. Throw in the fact that it doesn't look like interest rates are going anywhere, and the market could get a little bit of inflationary, but I still think supplies are going to be burdensome to keep us off that 450, 460 level again this year.
Yeah. Okay, so you make some really good points, John. I tend to agree with you. Like, the highs, you didn't say this outright, but I think the highs are probably in for the year for corn.
Right.
Unless we get some crazy weather thing that happens.
Right.
If we don't get any rain and it gets 100 degrees every day in the first 2 weeks of July, well, then all bets are off. But, I think what's nice about the USDA, and I'm going to get to South America stocks for a second, is comparing it to the USDA, and it's not perfect. You have plenty of critics out there. At least you have a good idea of where you think ending stocks are and what the percentage
right.
of usage is. In South America, it's a little bit harder to get a handle on. Like, they do have their version of the USDA, but it's just not as quite frankly, just not as well done as they
right.
do it.
It's private.
Yeah, it's private, and it's hard to figure out, where exactly their stocks are. If you look at some of those reports, and they're right. If those stocks usage numbers are close to 5%, that's tight, and that means there's a lot more exports that are going to come back here to the United States. Maybe not right now, but you got to remember, the United States is going to be the export market, pretty much now or the next month until February, and in we're just going to, and if South America doesn't have anything, you're going to see the export numbers go higher, and also
sure.
make that next South American crop that much more important.
Right.
So that's has something that the corn has. And the reason why I bring that up is because soybeans, that's where things can get crazy with soybeans, right? The way you get to, let's say, $9 beans is if we do 85 million acres, and then all of a sudden we have like 500 million carryout, and then it's like, oh geez, we're
yep.
we're going down by $2, right? But let's say we only have 83 million acres of soybeans and the yield's 46 and South America is out and all this demand is now coming to the United States and we're doing the math and it's like, whoa, ending stocks for new crop are now under 200. Well, that's how you get to $13, $14 beans. So it's the bean market is going to be extremely volatile. I like the spreads. And if you want to, I would just say to anyone, like, options and spreads are probably your friend if you're going to be trading the flat, you know, if you want to trade the soybean future. It's just going to, nothing might happen. We might trade between 10.50 and 11.50 for months. But it sets up, in terms of percentages of certain events that can happen, how volatile it can be, looks like beans by far can still be a dollar or two lower or a dollar or two higher from where we are now.
Yeah. Totally agree. Totally agree. So for tomorrow, for Thursday's report, again, 11 a.m. Feel free. Craig will be online tweeting about it. We'll be sure to get you the information. And you know, after that, we'll go into this 3-day 4th of July weekend that always promises fireworks. Throwing the Brexit and then all of the things going on with the U.S. election. And I think the next 6 months are going to be really, really wild. And I think you can lean on the fundamentals, which we're doing, but also we'll try to lean on money flow as well. So just looking at open interest, I do touch on this in my newsletter, really leans long to the soybean side, long to the corn side, and very short to the soybean side, or to the wheat side rather. Cotton a little bit long, and then the livestock, as far as the cattle goes, is almost bone dry to the downside. So,
yep.
You know, that would be kind of where you want to look for the snap moves in those markets the other way. If the fundamentals don't support. So
yeah,
we'll try to keep you in loop on that stuff.
Yeah, I think that's a great point on the cattle there. You know, if there are some people in the industry are making an argument that we could be seeing a seasonal low or a summer low with that. Mm-hmm. And sure. when I read some of those reports, the first thing I did is I looked at that open interest. I know John talks about it in this week in grain, and it is low. You know, the open interest is low, and the actual the net position on the funds, I don't think it's long. Is it neutral? No. Is it short? Are they short?
They never really get short much.
But they just get out.
They're short a couple of thousand contracts. You know, they might be long like 25K at the highs, and they're short long. This doesn't seem maybe a spec position that a lot of guys want to take. I don't know. But.
So there's room there. And then you see the big discount between cash and the futures, and especially in the back end. You know, usually cattle is most expensive during the winter, and it's cheaper in the summer. Which is the opposite of hogs, where it's more expensive in the summer and cheaper in the winter. And that really hasn't been the case. So to see October and December at these prices and then how low the open interest is and how the funds are, you know, pretty much neutral to maybe a little bit of a net short, I don't know. There could be value there in the back end of the curve for the cattle markets.
That's definitely probably – if you're looking to fade something that's been down, it's leading the cattle markets. And a lot of producers out there frustrated. Right. Certainly understand.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I don't know. I think that's about it. You got anything else, John?
No, that's it. We'll be back next Tuesday. Thanks for all the feedback, everybody. It's awesome to see where the listeners are around the world and here in the U.S. So if anybody has any questions, Craig will put our email addresses in the show notes. And, you know, we're always open to conversations and your opinions on anything. So thank you again for listening.
All righty. Talk to everyone next time. Thanks a lot.
Bye.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.